Welcome back. I'm Ismail Akhrin. You're with Cape Talk. This is your Cape Talk. Please call us and get involved in the conversation. As I said, you're, this is your Cape Talk, and you can drop us a WhatsApp note at 072-567-1567 or call us at 021-446-0567. Tweet us at Cape Talk. It is now my great pleasure, and I really do mean that, to introduce Charles Leonard, who is a it'll take me too long to give you a full breakdown of who Charles Leonard is. He's been an accomplished journalist since the 80s, and he's like most of us, we've had to redesign ourselves, so to speak, and reinvented ourselves and grow with the times. And Charles, so I'm not going to go into that. He is an accomplished journalist, but what his latest incarnation is, he's the podcast editor at New Frame. But Charles has also established for himself, by accident or by design, I think it's just out of passion, as one of the great DJs in the country, and he really makes me sick because he only plays vinyl, and his vinyl collection is astounding. His knowledge of music is also significant. So he shares with us on Twitter a group, and we always discuss jazz. So Charles usually plays lots of jazz, R&B, but I want to talk to him tonight about a very interesting series that he's been doing on political songs and what has inspired him. Good evening, Charles.
Good evening, Ishmael. Easy as
we are
here for years.
How are you?
And I'm very well, thank you. And after that flattering intro, I promise not to tell any of your dark secrets, because you and I go back a long way.
I said, please don't. Don't. Charles,
I know. I could do that.
Charles, as I said, there's so much that you've done and so much you've achieved. But one of the outstanding things, I'm sure you don't need more clicks, but if people who follow you on Twitter also know that you've been writing these series on political songs, and it has just exploded, and it's just a fantastic thing. Whether it's Nina Simone or Miles Davis, and so tell us a bit about let's ask the sort of magazine question. What is it that brought out this your interest in political songs, other than the fact that we're all political animals?
Yeah, it's actually that combination of us being political animals and my obsession. It's not an interest, it's an obsession in music. And there's a lot of times when these two things meet. Sometimes the results aren't that great, but sometimes there's some brilliant results. And you've mentioned a few of the artists I've written about. I started it in, I think it was August 2018. And the first one was, of course, a song that's very close to many of our hearts, Mannenberg, by the artist formerly known as Dollar Brand.
Right.
And so I did a weekly column on that, and I tried to do, obviously, a lot of South African music, but also a lot of African music, and then across the world. Politics is such an international and internationalist thing. Where you and I come from in terms of our politics, the struggles are around the world, and there's solidarity for these struggles around the world. And, of course, there's always people doing music about that. So the editor at New Frame asked me to do it, and, I just went on and on and on.
Yeah. Carry on.
Yeah, no, it's been fun.
I can imagine so, because I often had a discussion with somebody the other day, and there's a little meme going, Rihanna song, Shine Bright Like a Diamond, and we always, and the response was, diamonds don't shine. And then I went into discussion. Somebody asked me why I liked Pearl Jam, and I said, because Pearl Jam writes about spousal abuse, bullying at school, about child abandonment, and he writes about social issues, and people didn't realize. And I said, even a simple group like Simply Red, their song Money Too Tight to Mention is about Reaganomics and trickle-down economics. And so people don't realize that. So, and I think you've brought a lot of that to life.
You know, talking about pop artists and popular artists, even Dolly Parton featured in one of the columns, her song 9 to 5. It's about working class people, and it's about paying for the man, you know, getting the man to, or having the man forcing you to work in a certain way. And also, it was the way the eternal, it seems, glass ceiling for women workers. So it is, yeah, you used a very good example there of Pearl Jam, a variety of people actually did political songs, and sometimes it is the ones that's more universal, not as sloganeering.
Right.
These are the ones that just have a long, long life.
But you know, a lot of them are very, very complex. It's not even I don't follow hip hop very much. Maybe just because I'm an obali, or maybe because I love jazz and classical music too much. But the song is heavy is the crown head. That the crown wears. It's just a song about, I'm sure you know it. It's by an African American artist who basically discusses the burden of what we in South Africa call the black tax. Once you make it good, once you make it, you know, there's so many expectations. So at good so fun. Many levels, you know, the songs are political, and music is such a wonderful vehicle.
Look, hip-hop's being used as an amazing vehicle. The best example, of course, is Public Enemy.
Right.
The often quoted statement that Chuck D made was that hip-hop is the CNN of the streets. You know, and their politics have been always very outspoken. A lot of it has become bland and blasé, and a lot of the contemporary artists are just big capitalists and have lost total touch, my sense is, with the underclass, with working class people. But yeah, hip hop's a good example of how it continues being relevant and what makes it relevant. Kendrick Lamar is a good example as well.
Yeah, I think that's probably where I got it from, Kendrick Lamar. Because, as I said, I must confess, you know, even with reggae, you know, it's not easy to say. It probably exposes me. But, you know, I listen to Bob Marley and the Wailers, and I don't think there's reggae after that. Now, I mean, I'm open to be criticized, but it's, you know, that's where my interest in reggae start and end.
I think you and I will be in the same deep trouble. Look, my one thing you were talking there that I'm an amateur DJ. I DJ in East Rand townships, or I used to before the virus hit all of us. Every now and then I go and play reggae for my Rasta friends there. And you don't play reggae that's not conscious or roots reggae. And it goes, of course, beyond Bob Marley. But for me, the best reggae is the 70s, late 60s, 70s. Proper political reggae.
Let me just remind our listeners, we have on the line Charles Leonard, the podcast editor of The New Frame, and we're discussing his exceptional work on, I call it that, with music, we're writing about political songs. So if you're interested, send us a WhatsApp at 072-567-1567. You can call us at 021-446-0567 or tweet us at Cape Talk. One of our listeners sent us a WhatsApp note saying Working Class Hero by John Lennon from First Album by John B. He says Bruce Springsteen is another one. But he says, you know, Marley is the man and Peter Tosh. So it goes back, you know, it's like, I got into trouble with some friends the other day, and they were really offended when I said Trevor Noah wasn't funny. And they looked at me and they were stunned, and I said, but Richard Pryor is funny. So I, you know, don't give me any new reggae. I go back to old school Bob Marley.
I fully agree with your with what the listener said there about Bruce Springsteen. He is deeply political, and you know, many people thought born in the USA, including who was it?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. Yes. They tried to use that as a campaign song, and Bruce was furious.
He was absolutely.
Because it said it. You were talking about Reaganomics. It's about how Reaganomics broke that society. And that's what Born in the USA is all about.
That's precisely the point. I know that we're going to be playing out with Weeping, but I want us to, if you could just give our listeners, I can do it, but I'd prefer you to do it. Just give us a bit of background on Weeping, and I sincerely hope Peter Cohen and Ian Cohen are listening. Give us a bit of a breakdown on Weeping. Now, let me situate it. It came out during the state of emergency period, and when we faced a lot of trouble. But please go ahead. You're the guest on the show.
Thank you. Look, one thing we need to say, and I'll end there. You and I used to hang out in a very great dingy bar in Joburg, down in a basement called Jamison's.
I don't remember.
Which is, of course, a good sign, because it's like that thing of people would say, if you can remember anything about the 60s, you weren't really there.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing about the 80s, and that's where I first saw Bright Blue, and it could have been with you as well. So that was actually, as you said, a state of emergency. It was the 80s were the decade of P.W. Botha, die groot krokodil.
Yeah.
A paranoid man, a time of total onslaught. He was talking about, he felt threatened. White South Africa felt threatened by the external forces, as he called them, the liberation movements based in our neighboring countries, and of course, lots of attacks on them, brutal attacks, and also PW felt threatened internally. And how do you protect yourself if you're a paranoid man like that? You increase the size of your army, and it was also the time of military conscription. And because there was this big threat in their minds, more and more young white guys got called up, and you didn't have much of a choice. I think it was January 77. It became 2 years that you had to serve, as they said. And in 83, if my memory serves me correctly, the end conscription campaign started. The guys who were saying, "Genoeg is genoeg, we're not going to do this." Yeah. And it didn't go down well. It took a while for them to realize, because initially it looked like, this is just a sort of a party gang.
Yeah.
Because the ECC understood very well how popular culture is a very good tool to popularize your cause. Yeah.
The thing that I liked about it is, it's that it got past the censors. I mean, yes. Here was the thing that took the Mickey. I almost used an expletive.
I know which one.
it took the Mickey out of P.W. Botha and his krachtdadigheid, and Nkosi Sikelela was played in the background, and it came
precisely.
Right. It went through. It went through the completely. But
I was rambling a little bit there. But cutting to the chase of Weeping, Bright Blue, the band, was kind of the unofficial band of the End Conscription campaign, and Weeping was the unofficial anthem.
Yeah.
So this is very clear. You don't need to be the biggest music expert to have heard Nkosi Sikelela Afrika being clearly referenced in the song.
Yeah.
So it got past, and the lyrics, as you pointed out there, got past the censors. It even got past the censors of the SABC, and the SABC censors were even more active in those times.
No, they were skurka. Charles, they were skurka. Thank you so very much. Thank you so very much. We can go on talking forever, but thanks for coming online.
Your voice, yeah.
Yeah, and yes, good to hear from you too. It's been a while. It's, you know, just remember, I'm still a Western Province supporter, even though they're called the Stormers of something now.
But we both got it.
All right, Manuel, take care. We're playing out with Weeping. We'll hope to talk to you soon.
Okay, my good. Cheers.
Okay, cheers, bye. Bye.